Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is April 15th.
Yes, yeah. Tomorrow.
Which was tax day.
Yeah.
Right? But now they know.
Yeah, so what?
When did they push that to when? Like July?
July. Yeah. It's July 15th now.
Okay. I got a feeling that's going to move again. Because I don't know if people are going to be able to, you know, walk any accountant's offices and get their stuff done.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're going to make it. I think they're going to make mostly everything digital. Yes, anyway.
Walk into an accountant.
I mean, some people
not going to be able to do no HR Block Rapid Refunds, maybe.
Yeah.
The tax scams are going to go down significantly because you need to be in person for that.
Yeah, but I know some people who still have to, like even when I take my stuff to my guy, I ain't got no big old thing to do, but some people like to still go sit down, you know, just like, you know.
Jeff, you better go down there with your phone.
I had them on your, yeah, with my folder, my manila envelope, hand them on my receipt.
This is my airline stuff now.
Clips and rubber bands.
Exactly.
They got a shoebox.
Can I write this dinner off? You know what I'm saying? So we got a friend of the show on today because she and I had a conversation last week. Before I introduce her, what I'm saying is, I think what would my thought is to kind of try each show as this pandemic goes on and now the self-quarantine goes on and the ramifications of all this stuff are happening. There's ramifications that people are kind of all talking about, which is, you know, the lack of, and these are obviously super important, like the lack of jobs, lack of kids not in school, you know, possible food shortages, and I guess there's other stuff too that I'm blanking on. The lack of ventilators, medicine, you know, that type of thing, right?
There's the health stuff and the financial stuff and the educational stuff.
That's exactly. But there's massive ripple effects to all of this that I don't think that people are kind of really grasping. Like last week we spoke about the supermarkets.
Right.
And how so in certain areas within New York City are like the whole city's a mess. But there's certain areas in New York City that are like really going to be in trouble in some ways financially than others because, like we said last week, in you know, Upper East Side, Upper West Side, Tribeca, Soho, you know, around Central Park, areas where people have money, those people are gone. They left the city and they ain't coming back, especially now with schools definitely closed. Most of those people won't come back to the city until probably September because they don't have to come back to school and
they're working.
They go in for the summer anyway.
Yeah.
You said, and they're working from home. And why would you come back here if you don't have to with all the, you know, all the infections that are still happening? Like
New York is like ground zero.
Exactly. It's ground zero. So why would you come back to ground zero? Like for what? If you could live in, you know, up in, you know, Cape Cod or something. So, but anyway, that's we discussed that last week. So, we have, Whitney Gail Benta on, whose family owns, are y'all the biggest funeral home in Harlem?
One of the biggest.
One of the oldest as well, right?
Definitely, yeah.
Exactly. And so we spoke for a little while last week, and she was kind of telling me stuff that, again, I hadn't really kind of thought about, which is the ramifications of all this death and what's happening in the funeral home industry and what people are doing with bodies, and it's kind of craziness. So I wanted to have her on.
I think that's two-sided because there's the ramification of the mass amount of deaths and not being able to process all those bodies that quickly from a storage, you could say, but also I'm interested in the other side, which is people can't have funerals the way they want to, especially Black folk. Like you can't have you all day wake and in the funeral and then the past, and like you can't do that.
Wait 4 to 6.
Right.
Then the service start around 7. We go 7 to 9 with the service, and then we
come back 7.
About 7.
Wait 7 to 9. Wake on one day, funeral the next day.
Yeah. 6 to 9 on Wednesday. I want we going out to the
damn yeah, man. I want all my shit, bro. I want it all, baby. Y'all niggas better be wall sliding and flower bringing for me, boy. Y'all better put me in my good suit and put me away nice, baby.
Take me to Stan. He was too young.
Yes, one time I'll warn
he wasn't ready to go.
Watch this out, man. Good looking man, too. That's a shame. We get into it, on a somber note, I do want to, I think we all want to wish friend of all of us, friend to the show, friend of all of us, Bevy Smith, we want to send our love and condolences.
Yeah,
her father passed
away. Yeah, father passed away.
Absolutely.
About 3-4 days ago, 95 years old. So he lived a long life, but it doesn't make it easier. So we definitely give our condolences. And because of this, we can't even go to the service.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
We can't even think about
pay
going
respects.
To it.
And I'm
respects.
Sure, extended family, those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Whitney, kind of fill us in a little bit about just kind of what's going on out there.
Yeah. So originally when everything started, with the shelter in place, there was the ordinance from the governor that there could only be, 50 people max in terms of gatherings.
Yeah. With the 50 people, yeah.
Okay.
Correct. So with the first gap, that caused a lot of adjustments, in the funeral industry, like we said, especially when you are servicing the Black community, as we all know, you're like, everybody's showing up,
Everybody's
showing up. So, right.
And you ain't seen in 38 years.
Exactly. Yeah.
Everything. So the thing is like the 50 included employees as well. So the 50 included employees that you may not necessarily see. So if you think about that, that then reduces the amount of people that could then, be there to mourn and pay their respects. Mm-hmm. So originally what we had done to make sure that we could honor, as many families as possible and give them the opportunity was we started putting up signs and really just, because I think social distancing was still something that I think everybody was trying to wrap their head around. Mm-hmm. And so we made a sign saying, listen, please pay your respects and you got to go. So at that time, people were touching each other and things of that nature, but it was
hugging.
Very much. Yeah. So it was very much like, hey, pay your respects, but you got to leave because we got to create an exit so that more people could come in. Okay. So at that particular time, that's really what it was about. And then obviously as things imploded and we started seeing that it's really, mass everything, we had to make make more adjustments when it came down to a max of 10 people in one setting. So.
And does that still include employees?
So they blaxed on that because the funeral home industry is now seen as essential workers.
Right.
So, but to your point, in terms of a funeral, if someone wants to do a funeral, I've even seen different articles where the funeral homes are now adjusting the seats. So there's 6 feet apart,
right.
And, there's 10 seats. So
seems 10 seats isn't even always immediate family isn't always even covered by 10 people.
Absolutely not.
I was going to say that could be somebody's children. I mean? Imagine making the call. Who gets to be able to have that opportunity?
Yeah, the grandparents, the grandchildren don't get to go, the spouses, it's just
that's
crazy.
Rough.
The best friend, somebody.
Because most time family roles are four rows deep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because Black people, it's not just blood family. It's right. Your mom's best friend, that's your aunt. What I'm saying? She's in the family. It's deeper than rap, as they say. So.
Right.
That's tough calls.
That's a hard call. And then also when it comes to the internment at the cemeteries, that's something that I've been learning, that has been something that we've had to adjust to as well. And in regards to being in the cemeteries, now the cemeteries are no longer allowing families to come to see the body go into the ground.
Wow.
So we actually had a situation where they had agreed, the cemetery had agreed that the family could come to say the entrance of the cemetery, right? And one person from the family could come and see the body being laid down. However, they got to the cemetery
and
no, the the cemetery changed their mind. Yeah, so imagine you guys like deciding, okay, there's that one person who can go in, and at the last minute, the cemetery, they just didn't want to take the risk. So what we've been seeing, a lot of funeral homes, unfortunately, have had to bring the funeral director to the grave site, and they're taking video and they're taking photos and then giving it back to the family. So can you imagine, like, you know, yeah. So can you imagine just trying to say goodbye to your grandma and you like looking at somebody's iPhone
video? Yeah, like, and
that's what really pains me, is that even though we all know by now that, I shouldn't say that's what, that's one of the things that pains me, is that even though we all know by now that this, that that COVID has no age gate per se, losing elders and not being able to send them off properly is remarkably heartbreaking. Just the thought of it, right? Just the thought of not really, these people, some of them who have probably planned their home going for 50 years, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. just not being able to really give them a, I mean, I'm sure we can all do memorials later, but you know, for Black people, sometimes it's just not the same. But I'm curious, are you seeing any transition to more people wanting to do cremation, or are people holding pretty firm to like traditional standards?
Well, it's interesting. Yes, because of the, you know, Black folks love to have a show in terms of a casket, but I think just given the fact that finances, no one expected this, and you know, the unexpected deaths with, you know, that are happening, it's almost like, okay, cremation is probably the most financially and fiscally responsible thing to do. However, the interesting thing with that is that because there's such large amounts of people dying, there's a back, right. So everybody's affected by it. The crematories are backed up. The, you know, the morgues are backed up. So like, for example, I know that I've heard that with the crematory, they're telling you, this is when we can take this body. Like, not, hey, we have, so it's like,
how long is that time frame usually is?
We're a week. Normally it's like maybe 2 to 3 days. Now it's like a week and a half to two.
And the bodies can hold up that long? I guess it doesn't matter if they're cremated.
Well, no. So the problem is that you have a lot of these funeral homes, even us being a large one, you can only hold but so many bodies. So for example, if you have a body that is now, that say passed from a person that passes away from COVID, right? Mm. And then they're sitting there waiting a week and a half to be cremated. They're, if they're not embalmed, they're going to smell.
Yeah.
And if you are embalmed, that's an extra cost.
An alternative that a lot of families can do if they want to be able to, because what's happening is a lot of funeral homes are turning people away. So they're just going from us to another place, but they're going around in a circle because they're like, somebody's got to take us. But the problem is, so now they're having to now have another cost of being embalmed so that the body can then last a little bit longer.
Until somebody can get to them.
That's
exactly.
Now, when we spoke, you told me I guess it was last week or so, you had turned down like what, y'all alone turned down like 40 families?
In one day, we had to turn away 40 families.
In one day?
One day.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Man. So, and it's, you know, obviously, you know, financially, that's always a great thing, but these are people's lives. These are people's family members. And so, you know, and also, you know, we pride ourselves in wanting to make sure that we give everybody a proper home going. So to be able to say, like, unfortunately, we can't take you, like, you know, and in our cases, a lot of times we bury generations.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, it's like you're the only people they want dealing with it. Like, it's like, we don't know
like, well. Yeah. Yeah, so you're dealing with generations. So for us, it's just we don't have the manpower, the infrastructure, not to mention that we're also still trying to protect the employees. You know what I mean? And that's something that I think people don't necessarily take into consideration, is that there's also employees that are then, they have families. You know what I mean? So.
Now, what are y'all doing? Because, you know, again, how we do at the funeral home, we congregate in our front. Like, we all, this 80 people outside, they, you know, niggas showing up late. It becomes basically a reunion in the front of the funeral home. Like, you know, how are y'all dealing with that? Because of social distancing.
Well, so a couple of things, what we're doing is, well, we're being very upfront from the beginning in terms of like the arrangements part. And I think it's pretty evident that you can't pull that off. For example, we're not, because of social distancing, we're not allowing families, unfortunately, to come to the funeral home. So they're having to do Zoom arrangements or phone or arrangements over the phone.
So when you're talking about arrangements, you're doing like a Zoom call.
Exactly.
Instead of sitting down and talking.
Right. The only time that they would then come, and if this is going to be like a burial, then they would bring the clothes and things of that nature that would go as standard, right? Uh-huh. But so from the inset, they know that, okay, things are going to be different. So because now we have a limit of 10 people, that is, you know, that allows us to kind of control the traffic. Now, what they do on the sidewalk, unfortunately, we can't control that, but we can only control what's happening inside the building. Mm. So, you know, so far I haven't heard of cases of people congregating. I have heard of a couple of, like on a personal note, someone who had passed away and as a result of COVID, and their mother was like, but she has tons of friends and, you know, they don't want to come out. And she was like, well, then you don't want to bring them here because we can't put ourselves at risk because
by law. Yeah, by law.
Right, by law. So, you know, it's heartbreaking. It's really heartbreaking. And then also two things that I really, one thing I mentioned to you, Jeff, that was interesting was about the fact that even with burials, there's a 2-week waiting
to get the cemetery,
so it's not like the traditional, hey, Big Mama dies on Saturday, we have the service and then we go to the burial site, because it's depending on each cemetery. Sorry, y'all. This is my house. The cemetery operates based on their availability, and mind you, they have a lot of different funeral homes coming. You know, calling to make an appointment, so they have to basically work on, you know, the schedule of the cemetery. Even if I got the
prepaid funeral and the plot or my plot picked out, it don't matter. I still gotta wait. I still gotta wait.
It's not so VIP, man.
I think you got a
VIP pass.
I don't pay, Ms. Bento. I got one more payment.
It's crazy.
Got an all access. Get the line.
Get the line. And then something I learned today, which was fascinating, is apparently, because I've been interested in this and I've asked my mom actually a couple of questions about the John Doe's. I'm like, okay, so these people buying, I don't understand what's it called?
Hot Island?
So I was like, I don't understand. How come there's all these unclaimed bodies? Mm-hmm. And I said, what's happening? What's causing this? And so she said, it's not that the hospitals are not reaching out to the families. In some cases, you might have come off the street, right? And been like, I don't feel well. And you don't have a wallet, you don't have anything. So they don't even know how to contact that person's family. So a lot of times they're finding out, you know, that their relative has passed away just because they ain't heard from them. And so I just told her, I was just like, it seems so insensitive to just like put these people, you know, here. And she's like,
and never be heard from again.
Right. She's like, what else can they,
what do you
know?
Do? Yeah. Like, right. That's
do you think a lot of those people out there are homeless?
I don't know.
I think there would probably be a sizable amount of those people whose families simply didn't have the resources to come and get them, and claim their bodies. Because, you know, remember, you know, listen, if you're here and your only relative is, you know, in Texas or in wherever, and you know, they're struggling. They're trying to figure this out on their own. They can't come and just claim your body and pay for a funeral. And once you kind of claim the body, it's like your responsibility.
It's almost
like they don't have the means. And I think you're going to find, you know, not immediately, but later on, you're going to hear about stories of people simply not having the resources to claim those bodies.
Yeah.
And something fascinating about that whole story is I found out that they're actually using some public schools in New York City.
The whole bodies.
To build the boxes, mm-hmm. to build caskets, if you will, but the boxes.
The pine boxes.
Potter's boxes.
Yeah.
There was footage, a drone footage of them basically doing a mass grave.
Folks
were kind of, you know, trying to figure out, like, why were there still workers there? They could have used the backhoe. But I would assume that wood is incredibly thin, right? It's very yeah. cheap wood, right? So it's incredibly thin, and the pressure of kind of like just dumping a hole on air, you know what I'm saying? Like I'm sure yeah. that causes issues, but also I think that it does give some semblance of humanity, right? Like there is somebody mm-hmm. kind of, you know, literally taking a shovel and sort of handling them with some yeah. level of care yeah. and some yeah. level of decency yeah. In death.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of a dumbass question, but like, where do you see this thing going moving forward? Like, Whitney, what do you see? Because it doesn't, you know, obviously the deaths don't seem to be slowing down.
Yeah. I mean, it's changing our industry. We always, my brother has always been, you know, ahead of the curve when it comes to technology. So in terms of like using webcams and stuff, we've been doing that for years, but I definitely see that being something more and more that we see moving forward. I definitely see that at least in the Black community, there's going to be more cremations moving forward because I think people are just going to get more comfortable with the idea of it. You know, I've heard plenty of times old folks being like, you're not going to burn my body. You yeah. know, so right. I think we're going to see a change in the trend, you know, with yeah. that.
Bro wants the show. Yeah, bro wants the show.
Y'all going to give me my show. Y'all better not burn me up. I'm telling them, boy, I'm coming back to haunt all you niggas. You put me in the fire, man.
I'm waffling, man. I might fuck around and get that urn, man. Cause
listen,
the cast is expensive.
Listen,
and they just go into the ground.
I agree.
I don't disagree. And yeah, I mean,
everybody got their preference.
You want what you want, but you want.
Yeah,
I you know, and you guys know, maybe the listeners don't know, but basically, I buried 3 family members in like yeah. a 17 yeah. month period.
Yeah, that was insane.
So I definitely know what it costs, right? Like yeah. and it ain't no expense to sneeze at.
No, it ain't.
However,
yeah.
Sean Young has prepared. Like I prepared. I have prepared. And you niggas are gonna put me, y'all gonna send me home right.
You got your suit picked out?
I have on a hat, a fedora in the hole.
Full open. My shoes better be out, baby. Y'all gonna see these gators.
Yeah, Michael Jackson. The Michael Jackson casket. It's called
absolutely.
It's $20,000.
The glass joint.
Oh, my yeah. God. That's hilarious.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I'm at the point now. I don't know. I'm going to have to see what funeral homes are still around as I get up in age. Because, you know, who gets the body makes it. I need to look like myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's important. Yeah. But we got
because that's the worst thing you want to hear. Like, she don't look like
herself. Like
just
yeah,
like look you sleeping.
Right. That's all you want. Yeah, I want to look just like I'm sleep.
Yeah, exactly. Not all weird.
We got to a point in my family after a certain point because my grandmother had all of her siblings. She was one of 13. I think at the time it started happening, there might have been 9 still surviving. They were dying like every 9 months apart. Mm. So after a while, she was just like, cremate me. I cremated my dad. Mom wants to be cremated. Like all that extra fuck. You can still hold it. We still held a service.
Yeah,
you know
sure,
what I mean?
Sure.
We still did a service. But all that funerals are scam, man.
Like, and honestly, too, I can tell you
the
this.
Is a lot.
What they also are, they're an emotional. They take an emotional toll, yeah, particularly for the person who is planning, and frankly paying for it,
mm-hmm.
because as that person for 3 in a row, you don't. You don't really mourn. You really don't have, a lot of time to mourn.
Yeah, that shit crashes down on you like
yo, dude,
a month or two later, then it just you hit like a brick.
My sister called me at like 5:45 or something like that in the morning when my older sister passed away.
Mm.
Right? By the time I got to like dude, like from like 6 a.m., I was literally sitting with the funeral home making arrangements by 10 a.m.
Right.
Like wow. I had coffee that morning.
Yeah.
Like it was right. just I was on autopilot.
Yeah.
And moving and you don't, you know, and then you have this you know, I will say, you know, the hardest thing also with this process is that tombstone, right? Because that headstone yeah. is there's a level of finality to that is yeah. really kind of jarring.
Yeah.
like I definitely, it was actually when I did that was when those things started to hit me.
Started hit you, yeah.
Yes, because there was a level of finality to it that really closed that chapter.
Yeah. Also, the final thing, like what happens is, you see, you get caught in that whirlwind, and then you know the relatives is coming in, and then that's always kind of a weird thing because obviously, like everybody's coming in, so you're happy on one sense because you're seeing everybody you haven't seen in years, but you're there for this horrific reason.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But since you get on that high, and then the repast, and everybody's eating, and da 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 da, and you're going, and then when people go back home, and then it's like a week later, it's like pow. You know what I'm saying? Yep. When it's quiet and you know, and the calls kind of slow up a little bit, and then it's like, wait, what the fuck just happened in the last 2 weeks? You know?
Yeah.
What are you going to say now?
What I did want to say to Whitney, like, I actually come from a funeral home family, too. My cousins own a funeral, like, fourth generation funeral home owners. So I do want to say that the important thing about Aventa, because I did just shout out funerals are a scam, but I don't really mean that. When the reason that Black people trust funeral homes so much is not just because, like, oh, they're going to lay them out nice, so they're going to do whatever. But you do know that there are some people who are going to try to upcharge, upsell, up whatever, and hit you with a bunch of stuff you don't need. So when you do have a trusted family business, and I do, because this might be a whole nother topic, I worry that the Black family funeral home and mortuary business is starting to phase out because younger generations don't think it's sexy and don't really realize like how vital it is in terms of like an element of the community, really.
And it's financially a solid business because people die every
people
day.
You're
never going out of business. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It took my youngest cousin a minute to come around to being to running the home and learning the trade, and a family friends of the family back in South Carolina who owned one of the most storied funeral homes, like the son didn't want to pick it up, you know, like that type of thing.
Yeah.
But it is important to have like that community staple, like that multi-generational kind of like institution where you know like here in Harlem is Benta, out in Queens is Jay Foster Phillips, you know, like where you know like they gonna take care of you, they know what they're doing, you're gonna be
the white folks got Frank Campbell, like you kind of know what it is. So
Ortiz
for the
up here where I'm at, Washington Heights. Well, another thing I wanted to, moving on from that topic, another thing I read there's a huge effect that this this virus is having was a really interesting article. Again, kind of thought about it, but not really, which is and it's going to be hard because people have no sympathy for these people, but the MTA is on the brink of, like, collapsing because their bus and subway ridership is down 92 to 98%. Like, nobody's, obviously, everybody's inside, so nobody's riding the train, nobody's riding the bus, which means no money's being generated at all, but they still have to pay.
And they already applied for bailout money, which made it
worse, yeah. And they're saying, like, and then moving forward, then, again, because of the way this, we still have so, really little knowledge about what this virus is and how it'll, you know, how when it goes away, we have no vaccine, so on. So they said even if Cuomo, who mentioned today, he's going to start to try to implement small things to try to get a few people kind of back going. Who knows how many people are going to actually ride the trains?
Yeah, people are going
to some people are going to kind of have to because financially, you know, it ain't going to make nobody got money to ride from like the Bronx down to Lower Manhattan in a car. Like, but it's going to be, but the ridership in general is definitely going to be lower than.
Well, yeah.
It was a month ago.
And the ridership has grown so much in the past. The ridership has grown so much in the past 5 years also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we definitely could have used the break. I think that the other thing about the MTA that's a strain is that even though they reduced service significantly, there's like New York is the biggest subway system in the world.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many trains and so many lines and so many tracks. So they haven't really furloughed anybody.
Yeah.
Almost their entire workforce is still
working
unless they're taking voluntary days off. You know, I know one guy who works for MTA. He went ahead and took like his 2 weeks of vacation because he was like, I might as well go ahead and do it. But that's one of the things is that because they're not furloughing any of their workforce or laying off any of their workforce, and also these people are union, so it's not that easy to do it anyway.
Yeah, you can't do it.
Mm-hmm. And it still requires like a massive amount of manpower just to keep. You can't just go park the trains in the yard for 3 months.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
and even now, they have reduced service.
Yeah.
But even with that, it's still obviously not making any sense because nobody's riding the train. And then when people.
Well, some people are certain lines. Queens lines, Bronx lines are still packed because so many essential workers, healthcare workers
live in those areas.
And labor
the outer boroughs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then even if when people start to come back, it gets tricky because you can't keep it reduced service because that makes the trains super packed.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So they're in a real, it was a New York Post article. I just found it interesting because then, you know, again, it's something you kind of think about, but not really like, wait a minute, like what's going to happen when the trains start? Like, and so it's, you know, it's tough.
I think they're probably going to be like how I think Cuomo, or I think it was maybe de Blasio was saying that now there's a mandatory rule about like supermarkets, like you have to have a face mask.
Yeah,
there may be something that they, right, that they might be something that they'll try to enforce when it comes to the MTA, as far as that's concerned, in terms of like face masks, which is really a hard thing to regulate anyway. But, you know,
I guess they'll try to give out fines if they catch you without one or something. I don't know. So, yeah, just something else to think about. But let's move on to something a little bit lighter. I want to talk about what's the first thing I want to talk about? Insecure.
I didn't watch it.
Okay. Did you watch it, Whitney?
I did.
You watch it, bro? Yeah, but bro.
Not watching.
I know, but you don't like them though.
I mean, wasn't nothing else on. But I wasn't doing shit.
So Insecure, the popular show, Issa Rae, they made its premiere Sunday past, and the show starts not long after the last season ended. It's pretty close together. It wasn't like 4 years later or whatever. It was like real close, actually. I don't know what the time frame was, but it felt like a very short period of time between the end of last season and the top of this season.
Because I think they actually, the last time, they waited too much time, and I think it lost a little bit of momentum.
Yeah.
So I think that that's probably why they decided to bring it back. I mean, the timing couldn't have been better because people were sitting at home.
Yeah, but also meant like the actual show in and of itself.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Last season ended, and this story picked up like really close to after the, like felt like maybe like probably like a month or something. It was like dumb close. But the show, it starts off, I guess they're doing it slick this year because the first season shows Issa on the phone talking to somebody, we don't know who it is, and she says, nah, I don't really fuck with Molly like that no more. And then they do like kind of like, then they roll back to what I guess we'll see throughout the season what got them to that point.
Right.
But it starts off with Issa, Nye, I'm spoiling the show for you.
I'm not even listening. That's okay.
Okay.
Well, goddamn.
Yeah, goddamn. Miss Naima.
I'm reading the email.
All right. So the show starts off with Issa still living in the manager.
Property manager.
And Molly comes over and they're kind of hanging out and smoking a little weed and doing yoga. And Issa's on this kind of like getting my life together thing. Like, you know, I'm really got no money and nothing, but things are good. And she's working on throwing that big block party that she was talking about all last season. And her and Condola is her name?
Condola.
Condola seem to be like super close now. They're like buddies.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And working together as well, but they just tight and they just talking and hanging out. And then it gets revealed during the show that Issa finds out about Condola dating Lawrence.
Right.
And that becomes like really weird between them because now it's like, are we friends? Are we not friends? And, also, Issa has a new boyfriend. I guess I don't know if he's a boyfriend, but he got, what's the Abu, the security nigga that she was
big
having
fella.
Big fella.
We're trying out different positions. Bought a big bottle of Hennessy from he's a TSA worker. So he bought a big hot bottle of Hennessy, you know, because they confiscate your shit in the airport. He was kind of like comic relief, but I thought it was like really, you know, for our first episode, I thought it was well done how they kind of, you know, jumped in and moved it forward and kind of set up the new season. What did you think about it, Whitney?
I liked it. I mean, and, you know, I think I can be very critical sometimes of the show. because sometimes I think Issa's character just doesn't evolve, but I think I definitely felt like I saw growth in this particular, you know, as her, right, her character, you know, she's growing up finally. And I mean, yeah, I was looking at the Twitter, Black Twitter during and afterwards, and everybody's going in on Molly, and rightfully so. I just think that, like, you know, she's a bum ass friend. Like, you know, yeah, she likes Issa, but she likes Issa in terms of, like, in her station, where she's the one who's, you know, successful, giving advice, has it all together, or presumed to have it together. And then, you know, she likes Issa when she is, you know, she can kind of dictate struggling. To her. Yeah, when she's struggling. So it's just like you saw the imbalance of their friendship, and that, you know, it makes you question whether or not they really are truly friends. And what
exactly. Does she just use Issa to make herself feel better?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I ain't like you. I got money. I got this. I got that. But, and also she comes back still dating the Asian cat.
Right.
Kind of like those little, I didn't say dark. He didn't throw it dark. That's not the right term. But he kept it real about, yeah, he's still dating other people, I guess, because they had never had a conversation about it. And she, you know, got in her feelings and started acting weird and acting funny because, you know, she really likes him. But she did the Molly shit, which was the clam up and not talk to him and, you know, shut down and, you know, act like everything is cool, but not really cool, you know. So it's going to be interesting, though, to watch Molly this season because, like you said, she's going to kind of, she could possibly become almost like the villain of the show in a way, you know.
To me, the real real star of this show, and I hope her character develops and evolves a lot more, is the, I don't know the name of her character, but the, I know her, Natasha Rothwell, I think it's her.
Oh, they have the, heavy skin. Kelly.
I think she's so dope, and I really hope that they just, like, expand her character, like, a lot more. And the only thing I got to say is, like, how much longer can Amanda Seales be pregnant? I'm tired of seeing her pregnant. When's she going to give birth to this baby? Like, the storyline is corny at this point. Yeah. Like, let it go.
But again, that shows you how short the time was from last season to begin this season, because she's still, like you said, she's still pregnant.
Yeah.
You know what'd you think about it, bro?
It's one of those shows where no one's likable. Like, no one is just a likable character. You know,
it's like your Mary Jane.
Yes, it's very much aligned with what that, you know, it with kind of that vibe. You know, I watched it. I was, you know, it was very typical, right? Like, Molly getting upset that dude was still seeing other people. When, why is that so weird? Like, why is she freaking out about this? You know what I'm saying? I was like, okay, I mean, I'm watching it. I'm here. I'm rooting for the Black people, but, you know, God bless. What I found very interesting, what I did find very interesting was the whole Lawrence, you know, type joint. Like, if you've been dating with, like, you had no inclination. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, well, you're good now. Yes. Wherever you are, stay right there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Where did I leave off?
You was talking about Lawrence.
Oh yeah, I mean, like, that just seemed weird to me. Like
that he wouldn't know.
That he wouldn't know. He seemed really freaked out about it, and it was just like, yo, man, you're a grown up. Like, did you guys think that no one had dated people before? Like, it just. I don't know, man. Maybe I'm just out the game and I don't, it just seemed very weird to me. Like, y'all like 30, bro. Like, this isn't like y'all are not kids. Like, y'all are whole grown ass adults.
Yeah. 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 And in LA, I listened to, Crystal's, podcast about security. She made a good point. Like, or maybe I read it online somewhere, but, like, you know, black LA is a very small circle. You know, of kind of Black progressive LA, whatever you want to call it. So the odds of you kind of, you know, dating somebody who's dated somebody who is around you are, like, really high in California. You know what I'm saying? It's a kind of a small circle, and all those people kind of go to the same places. So it's easy to kind of, like, cross lines with people, you know? But yeah, oh, you know what? Did y'all, any of y'all watch the Madam C.J. Walker joint?
I did.
I heard Megan's review.
Yeah, no, I'm good on that.
Yeah, I didn't think you watched.
It was a Lifetime special.
It really was. It really was.
And well, a lot wait. Of, After Saturday, we got to stop using Lifetime as the barometer.
Yeah, we're going to get to Lifetime. We're going to get to Saturday. We're going to get to Saturday in a minute.
So we got that part.
So what do we call it now? A TV One joint?
Black Stars movie?
UPN.
The UPN, a bounce TV joint?
Yeah, Black Stars. Remember Black Stars?
Black Stars word.
Man of City Walk, it was inspired by one, you know, and they tried to use that as kind of like the opportunity for them to be able to take creative license with it. I just think a lot of things were done wrong. And I'm a huge, like, I've always loved the Madison J. Walker
kind
story.
Of fictionalized, but I think people didn't understand it was supposed to be fictionalized.
I mean, like, why was there a boxing scene? Like, between the, you know, like, come on now. Like,
they play a modern music, too.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember, y'all are all old enough even to remember, do you remember when Leo DiCaprio and Claire Danes did Romeo and Juliet?
That shit was hot, though.
Right, but I think they were trying to go for, like, you know, modernize and update an older story and make it kind of fly-ish something. I don't know. I kind of see the vision. I just think it didn't curl all the way up.
It was too important of a story, you know what I mean? Just in terms of the times that we're living in terms of being entrepreneurs, you know, showing you know, the range of what Black people have been able to accomplish, that to me, that's not the type of story that you want to fictionalize. You want to tell it as accurately as possible, you know? So instead of kind of cooning is what I felt there were parts of it that
That was definitely coony. And also, like, it felt like they were looking for, to try to make it like dramatic. And I was, you know, me, I understand that she had some drama happen in her life, but I kind of wanted to see more of the business side, because it's like, for a Black woman to make that much money in like the early 1900s was like, I can't wrap my mind around it. Like, and to buy that type of home and live next to a fucking, the Rockefellers. Like, I'm like, wait. Like, how did, she was like, I bought a factory. Like, but I wanted to see like how'd she really get that shit popping? Like, I was way more interested in that than the like, oh, her and her husband got drama. Like, I mean, you know, I get that too. But again, Her story, to me, in the Black community is way more known for her business acumen than her, you know, personal life drama. And I wish they would have leaned more on that, because to me, that's way more interesting than, you know, again, you know, who was screwing who and all that type of shit.
And the other thing that I thought was really lazy, what they did was the rival person.
The light-skinned lady.
Yeah, but the thing is, the person in real life who was her competition was the same complexion as Man of CJ Walker. So to me, it's like, I hate these lazy storylines of like, okay, light skin versus dark skin person. And like, that's how we're going to show, you know, who's superior. I just think that's so tired and played out. And I just thought it was just really lazy.
And also, I didn't like, I didn't like Tiffany Haddish's acting at all. And the fact, and Tiffany Haddish and Octavia Spencer only 7 years apart in actual age. Tiffany's 40 and Octavia's 47. So it's nuts for Tiffany to be playing her daughter. It's like, they're basically the same age. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was like, there's so many young actresses they could have gotten for that part that would have made just made more sense. And even just chronologically, like get somebody who's 25 or something. Yeah. It's just weird. Like, Tiffany's like a grown-ass woman. And it was a big... It was a lot of missteps.
Yeah, you know? Lazy.
What else y'all been watching?
What have I been watching lately? I've been binging a lot of TV, but I don't know if any of it is worthy enough to really. Oh no, I do have one for you, especially Sean. I mean Jeff. On Prime, there's a series called Tales from the Loop, and it's based on a series of artwork. Actually, it's based on a series of paintings, not a story, not anything. But it's kind of a combination of Stranger Things and like Black Mirror. It's very cool, and it takes a little bit, and it's weird because the series is kind of like you do need to watch it in order, but at the same time, each story is kind of disconnected from the other story. There just may be something that happened in a previous story that you need to know, but it's not really like a linear episode one, episode two, episode.
Okay. Okay.
But you also can't skip around.
Okay.
If that makes sense. But each story, with the exception of the first one and the last couple, each story focuses on somebody different who lives in this town. And it's about a town. There's like this research facility underneath the town that does all kinds of like physics, space, time, continuum type stuff. And because of the work that happens in this research facility under the town, all kinds of weird things happen in the town. So it's about that. So it follows like the different people. And it's very cool. I'd stumbled upon it. It was a fun watch. I enjoyed it. I told y'all last week about How to Cover Up a Drug Scandal. How to Get Away with Murder is back. It's the last half of the last season. I'm kind of over it.
Okay.
I haven't been watching a lot of real time TV. I've been looking for stuff that I can binge. I haven't really been doing like episode by episode.
Me too. What you been watching, bro?
I mean, not much really, man. I've been shit, man. I might get on YouTube and look at some barbecue videos. How to smoke me a hog?
That's some barbecue. That's a barbecue.
And like, you know, what's the five best handguns or some shit like that?
Yeah, that's my nigga right there, boy. Guns and barbecue, nigga. What you talking about?
Needed to pause. I just wanted to welcome Gavin to the show.
Yes.
Hi, Gavin. Sorry, we have a baby. Y'all can't see him.
Yes.
y'all hear him.
I've been watching, the Atlanta murders, missing and murdered.
I wanted to get into that.
That's really been my thing.
I've been watching. I started this thing called Duty and Shame. It's a Netflix series about this the Yakuza, the Japanese mafia. But it's not a documentary; it's like a movie. I'm about four episodes in on that. That shit is dope. I watched Unorthodox.
I just started that.
What do you think? I started it and then I tapped out like halfway through the first episode. What do you think?
It's super dope.
Like, again, I'm not gonna, spoil or anything, but like, I just can't believe. Obviously, the people, because they have a thing called The Making of Orthodox on Netflix too. They got like a separate thing where you can watch like the background and stuff. Obviously, they have, everybody who is in the movie and worked on the movie is Jewish. Some Orthodox, some, just not as Orthodox, but everybody's Jewish. But it's just and it's based on a book. But even with that said, it's like the amount of inside stuff that they're showing in the movie is like, damn, I can't believe they doing, they showing this. It's really good. It's only four episodes, so it's not long to get through.
I forgot to say I'm watching. I can't remember if I brought it up in here. Little Fires Everywhere, which is
I heard that's great.
Kerry Washington and why am I blanking on my girl's name?
Reese Witherspoon,
whom I love.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I might have said it in here when it first started because Hulu is dropping episodes weekly. It's really Reese. It's a perfect character for both of them. One thing a lot of people keep saying is that Carrie's lip quiver acting is on overdrive and it's distracting. But what's funny is that she knows that about herself, and clearly directors know that about herself, because there's a couple of episodes where there's a younger her and the woman playing the younger her has the same shit. So it's like, it's funny that people are that aware of it.
Yeah.
That she does the same, but it is hella distracting sometimes. But it's super stressful. You almost don't know who to root for when you're watching it. Like, it's so complex because both of them have really, it's really about a tale of two mothers, and both of them have really positive aspects and both of them have like really negative aspects and make really bad decisions, and it's how it affects their kids. But it's a really interesting and gripping watch. And once I finish it, I'm going to read, it's based on a book. I haven't read the book before, but since I'm already in it, I'm going to finish it and then go back.
Okay. Okay, and also I've watched, I got one for you. I thought about you too when I watched it. The Frank Matthews Story, and I think that's on Prime. Do you know who he is, bro?
Oh, yeah, Frank Matthews.
Yeah, did you watch it? Did you watch
the
doc?
Is that the Al Profit doc on YouTube?
No, this one's on Prime.
Well, yeah, it's the same doc. It's the
same one. Okay,
yeah,
I didn't realize
same
that.
One. It's, yeah, it's yeah. Al Profit. Al Profit is actually good with some of those.
Yeah, Al Profit. Yeah, yeah, Al Profit. Yeah. Al Profit. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was really good. Like, again, like Al Profit got like some people to talk that I was kind of like, oh, okay. He got like a lot of real information. For those who don't know, Frank Matthews was he was actually the biggest drug dealer of the time. Nicky Barnes and Frank Lucas, long guys. He was actually the biggest one because Nicky and Frank Lucas were selling drugs in the New York area. Frank Matthews was on his way to becoming like international drug dealer. Like he was doing it all up and down the coast, in the South. He was like, he was literally the plug. And then the cops were closing in on him and he vanished and nobody ever saw him ever again. They have no idea where he went, what he did. Isn't kind of rumors. He had a wife we didn't take. He had a young girlfriend. They booked off together, and neither one of them were ever seen or heard from again.
What network is this?
It's a Prime, but it's also on YouTube.
Yeah. I want to check that out.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really well done. It's really, really well done. Like it was in the 70s, so it's not like it was 100 years ago. You know what I'm saying? It's really well done.
So y'all don't watch 90 Day Fiancé?
I do. I watch
Naima's a junkie for that shit.
I watch all them bitches. This season of Before the 90 Days is the most horrible crop of Americans. And I've watched all these motherfuckers. They're always horrible Americans. This is the most disgusting batch of Americans I have seen yet. And I mean, that's saying a lot. They are horrible, terrible, shallow,
Ed Nonek,
superficial people. Oh my God. Like, and what it seems, there's the one black woman, bless her heart, is getting catfished to death. And she refuses to believe it. She's an older woman. What's her name? Is she, Rachel something?
She's dating someone named Williams.
With the guy Williams. But she is being catfished by this guy. First of all, they've been talking on the phone for 3 years, something crazy. Is it years?
Never met.
It might have been 7 years, honestly. No, she's a widow.
Guy, that white guy, 7 years. I think with them, it's 3 years. But it's a ridiculous amount of time. Basically, they have never even video chatted. He told her that his phone is broke.
For three years?
It's definitely been over a year. I might be exaggerating with three. It's definitely been over a year. He told her his phone is broke. They let us hear audio of them talking. My man is definitely Nigerian. She was like, that British accent. He told her he's this white man in London. She was like, that British accent is so sexy. And I'm looking at the TV like, boo, that nigga is in Nigeria. Like, I don't know what to tell you. And then it was time for her to buy a ticket to go visit him. Her daughter was going to go with her because she was like, I don't trust none of this. Like, none of it. And the woman she was married for ages. Her husband died. You know, she's clearly just not savvy.
Yeah.
And what her daughter really needs to do is sit her down and make her watch like a whole 2 seasons of Catfish right quick. Because she was trying to go see dude blocked her on Instagram. He told her he couldn't log into his Instagram. He didn't know what happened.
Come on.
Then he changed his picture, his name, everything on Instagram. He still told her his account was hacked. Then she got an email from someone sharing information that she'd only given him. But she's telling producers, well, it can't be him because it isn't his email address. And I'm like, oh my God.
She's somebody's mama.
Yeah,
she sent some provocative, you know, personal photos of herself. And so this random email is sent to her, and it's like basically like we're going. Sorry, Gavin.
That's okay. Hi, Gavin.
So basically, it's like if you don't give us X amount of dollars, we're going to expose these photos. And so the mother's she's like any typical mother, just that's older and just naive, and it's like, well, I don't know how this could have happened. The only person
there's no way this can be him. He never talks to me like this. This has to be somebody else. I think they must have hacked him, and they're using. And you could tell the producers are like, really, real. So there's that. There's another dude that actually has been talking to this chick in Scandinavia. No, in Ukraine.
That one's 7 years. Yep.
He's been to Ukraine 3 times. She has stood him up each time.
Ukraine.
Yep. Apparently, he's part of a scene. So I go on 90 Day Fiancé Reddit sometimes. Apparently, he's part of a scene of older white men who basically, all their travel is to pick up like European wife, potential wives. Like they,
because he's 60.
Dating sites. Yeah, they do the dating sites. They do the whatever. And whatever site it is he's chatting to her on, he pays by the minute because he's talking about how much money it costs him to talk to her. And he's like, yeah, because you got to pay to talk to her. And it's like, what social media site do you have to pay to talk? Like, even some of these.
By the minute.
Sites, you don't have to pay to talk to them. So he's in Ukraine now. The chick done stood him up again. He's been there for days already. Bless his heart. So he's definitely being catfished. Now, like, in the next episode, she agreed to meet him because if you want to go through the K-1 visa process, you have to have proof of relationship. So at minimum, you have to have a photo together.
Mm.
So she was like, I'll meet you to take a photo so we can get the visa process popping. So we have to see what that looks like. There's this dude who we have no idea what's wrong with his neck. I can't believe producers didn't ask him. Like, he literally has no neck. He looks like a pug. He literally has no neck. He's short. He's like 4 foot something and fat. And just like
he calls himself Big Ed.
And he calls himself Big Ed. He rides a motorcycle. Ed hasn't been in a relationship since his ex-wife, which was like 20 something years ago, something crazy. Like, his daughter's 24, so it was like 20 years ago, or his daughter's 28, something. So it's like 20 years ago. He is dating this chick from, where is she from?
She's from the Philippines.
She's from the Philippines, who's younger than his daughter, so his daughter's not speaking to him. He's gone to the Philippines to see her, and he is the most annoying, nagging, like, sensitive, like, oh, he has eczema, except he calls it something dermatitis. It's like, it's eczema, my dude. Like, everything is wrong. Like, I need the air conditioning. I need this, I need that. So he gets to the Philippines. First, they stay in, like, a major, maybe Manila or something. They stay in a major city. Then he goes to her village, and he's walking around in shock, and he's like, oh, my God, this is, like, a third world country. It is a third world country. Like, you know what I mean? It's just kind of like, it's an actual third world country, my dude. Like, they don't have, you know, working plumbing.
Yeah, it's the Philippines.
They don't have the luxuries. And he is stressing the fuck out. And now he's like, well, now I'm wondering if she really loves me, if she just needs a ticket out of here. Y'all been talking for 3 months. Her son calls you daddy, and you're in the Philippines. She's 23. Of course she's just looking for a ticket to go to the States. And you are just keeping somebody young and submissive.
Yeah.
Because you can't get a ticket. That's the funny thing to me. Like, the Americans always act like they're being used, but they are always using these people.
Exactly.
They are always
using them. It goes both ways.
Yeah, it's a trade-off. So, of course you're being used. But and then there's this white woman who's a second white woman on the series who is engaged to a Nigerian dude who randomly, like, hit her up on Facebook as the other one did. But this one, like, she's just evil. And his mom, as of the last episode, has said no to them getting married. Like, she actually didn't even answer. She just got up and walked away.
Wow.
So that's going to be an interesting.
All right.
His name is Soulja Boy, by the way.
Yeah, he's a rapper in Nigeria.
He's a rapper named Soulja Boy. S-O-J-A. But anyway.
God bless him. All right, so I'm going to get on those. One other thing, too. First of all, I will still sit down and watch Catfish on Demand. I just think that show...
The first couple of seasons were so good, but then you just can't recapture the magic of the first couple of seasons.
What,
like,
when you watch these newer ones, I'm telling you, people are still out here getting captured. Like, it ain't like it's like it's real. Like, I saw a joint with two gay cats, black cats. These niggas got to fight in the street.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, it's real. Like, I saw that, but what I was gonna say is, I started watching the series Dave. Have you heard of Dave?
I haven't heard of that.
Dave is, y'all would like this, bro, you would like this too. Little Dicky, the rapper Little Dicky, right, mm-hmm. Jewish kid from Philly, had a huge record with Chris Brown, called If I Was Chris Brown, or something like that. It's a big record. But anyway, it was a really funny video. But anyway, he's basically got a series on Hulu. It's basically like Curb Your Enthusiasm, but with hip-hop. Like, so he's in L.A., and he's trying to be, he's Little Dicky, just like Larry David is Larry, and he's trying to navigate his way through trying to become a rapper in L.A. But it's like real, like YG was on the first show.
Okay.
Like, he's got real, you know, artists on the show. But it's mad, what's it called, it was on the second one, Macklemore. Like, so okay. It's like mad, it's mad funny, but it's like, and you know, he's Jewish, so he's got that kind of, you know, Jewish humor to him, and but no, he can like really rap. Like, he can like rap like crazy. Like, he's nice. So it's just a really funny show, man. It's really like the half hour episodes. It's like I said, basically, if you like Curb Your Enthusiasm, then you'll love this show. So I recommend that. But let's get into the Atlanta murders real quick. By the way, bro, I started listening to Monster.
Okay.
Yeah. And funny enough, I know two of the people that was interviewed on there.
Oh, wow. Okay.
On Monster. Yeah, yeah. It's a guy named Bernard Parks, who used to manage DJ Toomp. I don't know if he still does.
Why do I know the name? Who else did he manage? I know the name for some reason.
He managed some other people too, like back in like the late 2000s. I don't think he's in the music thing anymore. I don't think so. And then Jasper Cameron, who's my man, that's my guy. I love Jasper, and he's a great writer. He wrote Promise for Sierra. He wrote Girls Around the World and You for Lloyd. He actually discovered Lloyd. He's wrote Bedrock for the Cash Money people or whatever they were. Like, he's done a lot of stuff. So anyway, he's on there too. Because these guys are born and raised in Atlanta. But I'm finding it really interesting to listen to Monster now that I'm starting to watch the series to kind of get a little more detail and background. But what did you think about this week's episode, bro?
It basically solidified what I felt.
What you were saying, yeah.
Which was they're going down the sort of conspiracy rabbit hole. And It doesn't feel like, listen, I would actually be okay with feeling like this was a good show if there was an alternative theory being presented, right? Not just spaghetti on a wall. Like, it's a lot of, you know, we're not sure, or Wayne didn't do this. But there's not a lot of, you know, concrete, roads they've traveled. And I feel like the mayor is really in a terrible position, right? Because
she is.
Because she has to acknowledge and acquiesce and sort of give in the fact that this is something they have to address. This is something that's on her city's watch, right? And just acknowledge that it was a terrible that they were not investigating this in the same way.
It says she's in a tough spot because she's born and raised there.
Yes.
So she got to deal. It's kind of similar to Raz in Newark. Like, you can't blow the old niggas off.
Yes.
You kind of
you kind of got to acknowledge it, right? So then there's like this sort of issue where I'm watching this and I'm like, okay, they're at least going to give me a theory, right? They're at least going to give me some level of, hey, he didn't do this, but this was going on during this time.
Mm-hmm.
Or we should look at this person. Or, you know, there's none of that. There's none of that.
Yeah.
It's just hours of trying to, you know, basically, I don't want to say instill fear, right? But they're using the clips. They're using the people from that particular era. They're using them in a way to sort of invoke a level of emotion that I think is okay to have people emote like that. I just don't think it's okay to sell them on this idea that Wayne was not the person doing this. You know, again, without some sort of concrete, real explanation as to why these killings all of a sudden stopped. Now, we've talked about this before and that we didn't think that Wayne did absolutely all of these killings, and I think that that's fair to say. But he did that shit, bro. Like I said last week, so I don't know what to tell y'all. I really don't know what to tell y'all.
Well, the cops really left Whitney's got a get ready to run. So we just want to say thank you to her for coming on the show and breaking it down for us.
Love you guys.
Give Gavin kisses for us.
Yeah, we'll do. I'll see you guys soon.
Okay, babe. Talk to you soon. Be safe. All right.
Take care. All right.
Okay. The cops also really left it open because they. Let me change it. Not the cops. The district attorneys left it open because they only convicted Wayne of killing two adults. So by doing that, it's like, well, then who killed the kids? because they never convicted Wayne of killing any children. So that leaves a conspiracy theorist to be like, well, see, they only got him for the adults, but they didn't get him for all these other kids. So that means that they didn't really know who killed the kids. And once they caught Wayne, they just shut down. It was like, oh, we got him, done. You know what I'm saying? It was like, okay, that's it. No more investigation. No more nothing. We got the guy. That's it. And again, that this leaves conspiracy theorists room to do what they're doing now.
There's conspiracy theorists. There's conspiracy theorists in every, you know, facet, right?
But absolutely.
But the reality is that even if you said Wayne did, even if you could tie him to 14 of 20 murders, right?
Mm-hmm.
The question is always going to be, he didn't do it. Because we're not talking of, people are not saying, we don't think Wayne did all of these murders. People are outright suggesting that Wayne had...
He was just railroaded.
He was railroaded. There was nothing. He did absolutely nothing here. What I think is very interesting, and I think it was kind of harsh at the time, but, you know, they talked about one of the kids, the FBI agent basically said that he thought the mom killed the son.
Yeah.
And... Did it come off harsh? Yes. Was it an absolute pie in the sky theory? Yes. Was it something that I think registered to people in a certain way? Yes. But I don't think we're talking about any, like a lot of these kids, the majority of these kids, they use the word street kids, but that's a wrong terminology. Mm-hmm.
They weren't all just street kids.
well, what they were kids of the late 70s, which was,
yes,
you know, they weren't necessarily supervised. You know, 12.
Yeah, you go outside, and sometimes you go outside. Yeah,
12 years old. You know, like you take Patrick Baldassare, right? Like he's out at midnight. He's last seen at midnight.
Yeah,
and when we think about that now, that is insane. That is mind-boggling that a 12-year-old would be wandering downtown Atlanta at midnight alone, right? But it's 1977. I'm 100% sure he was not the only 12-year-old that was out there. And so the what I'm saying is that I think that they've kind of proven that Wayne had these sorts of issues in the podcast. They talked about that. Mm-hmm. He talked about the class issues. I don't think it was very realistic for anybody to suggest that, you know, oh, it was the Klan, you know, so the Klan is just riding around picking up black kids in black neighborhoods in a pickup truck, right? Yeah. Like, is that what we're saying?
30-something of them.
Then it was, well, it could have been some white cops. And I'm like, you know, this is Atlanta. We're talking again. We're not even 10 years out of MLK being killed. So we're not talking about a bunch of white officers on foot patrol. Like a lot of the time, the police departments are still segregated at that point. So you're talking about black people in black neighborhoods. You're not.
Exactly.
You know, then you talk about the whole other sexual shit with, not even sexual shit, you know, basically the child.
Yeah, the pedophilia.
Pedophilia and all of the things that was going on over there. And again, nobody acknowledged that. Like, this man is talking about this kid coming back to his house and he was supposed to come back and
for his birthday.
And nobody, his family does not acknowledge it. They do not recognize it.
Yeah. Yeah, he was like, he was kind of mad that he didn't come back. Like, he was about to come back here and celebrate my birthday. This dude had to be in his 50s, at least at that time. And, you know, with a 12-year-old, it was, he said that you have to see the spin on. I'm very interested to see, you know, this week coming up, they interview Wayne from prison. So I'm kind of curious to see how he's going to try to spin his story, too. But like you said, it's a tough, you know, because what it is with this case and other cases too, and I'll even just do a quick thing, and I know you can't speak on this, bro, but I watched Love and Hip Hop this week, and one of the things they discussed was Kirk and Rashida's son got arrested, I guess while you guys were taping, and Kirk and Rashida are talking about it, and he's like, Kirk is like, yeah, you know, my son, I forget the boy, Kirk Jr., actually, his name's Kirk Jr., he's like, yeah, you know, he was telling me that you know, he wanted to get out, but I told him, hey man, the way they wrote your police report up, you're like a criminal, and not to give you no bond, because the way they wrote it up, it was like you were really out here wilding. And then Kirk and Rashida go into this whole thing about, you know, oh, you know, because they be going after these black boys, and you know, they, you know, it, it's hard out here for black boys to live, and they, you know, how it's stacked against us. But meanwhile, their son got caught with a gun, with a sawed-off shotgun, and some weed, and
it was a sawed-off shotgun. I thought that went away in the 90s.
He had a sawed-off shotgun and some weed in the car. So it's like, and Kirk even says, he says the wildest shit. Like, yeah, once they saw his name and saw it was Kirk Frost, he was fucked. I'm like, regular nigga, you ain't that famous, number one, nigga. You ain't that. Your wife is way more famous than you, number one. And number two, it was just, but I'm just saying all that. It was the conversation. I'm sorry. I hope your son is, you know, God bless, you know. But the conversation was ridiculous.
Bro, a sawed-off shotgun?
A sawed-off shotgun and some weed in the car. But somehow, it's not his fault. But my bigger point to that was, that kind of similar to this Wayne Williams thing, in that there's always going to be, because of what's happened to our race and culture since we were literally dragged over here, there's always going to be a huge section of us, no matter what the situation is going to be like, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if that I don't know. It's just, we have an innate, you know, rightly so, we have an innate fear of authority.
And I think that that's happening
in the Wayne thing.
Yes. And I think that it is not out of the realm of possibility for there to have been some level of conspiracy. That's not crazy. But I think we also get to the point where we start to ignore very clear factual evidence and data in front of us. Like, by example, of the murders stopped. Yeah. Immediately.
And never started back up.
Immediately, right? So we're saying that this out for blood serial killer killed all of these black folks, right? And then decided the day that Wayne was caught that he was never going to do this again. He turned his life around.
I'm good.
Like,
law-abiding citizen.
what is the logical sense here? But I also think that what we've found is that this level of outrage and this sort of level of conspiracy and this sort of level of, and I'm using air quotes, getting to the truth, has become fodder for content, right? Whether it's your public access radio show, whether it's your podcast, whether it's you know, a television show, like, it has become content. Nothing will. Black rage is a commodity and it's used as such.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So whether or not it's the sadness of seeing those women in the first episode, whether it's the idea that all of those people in that church or the majority of those people in that church believe that Wayne, you know, either didn't do it or they're not 100% sure that he did, right? Mm-hmm. Like, all of that is speaking to some real deep-rooted shit. And, I get it. I understand it, but I'm not speaking on Wayne's. But, like, the fact that they would have that audio, the fact that they got him speaking and we're going to do this together.
The people whose family members were killed.
It was just wild to me.
Yeah, it was wild, man. So that's what I mentioned. And obviously, you know, I think it's only four parts, so it should be over. In this couple of weeks, we're going to keep covering. But I wanted to wrap the show up with the Clark Sisters TV movie, which is my opinion, Jackson family movie.
Oh, level. It's going up with the Jacksons, the Temptations, and the New Edition story.
It's no question. It's in the pantheon. It's
in there.
It's on the Mount Rushmore of best black TV movies ever. It was just awesome, man. It's just awesome from the door. How do you say her name?
Angelou Ellis.
And you know me, nigga. You all have to change it up, nigga. Agatha. No, I'm sorry. And Angelou Ellis. Please give her an Emmy right now. Good. She embodied
Dr. Hattie Moss. Like, had her down. All of them did all of them.
And you can and you can only and same thing. I mean, it's obviously a very different kind of thing, but same thing when I mentioned Uncorked a couple weeks ago with Courtney and Niecy. There's like subtle nuances to those characters
right.
that you can only have if you're Black.
Yeah.
You can't, I mean by black, like really have lived the Black experience, however you want to define that. There's just like little hand movements and just little gestures and just little things that she was doing, like that mean church lady.
She
like
was,
that is a real person. Like that, we know that person.
A sanctified mama. She was such a sanctified mama. But that was the one thing. First of all, my sole complaint about this is that it actually should have been an hour longer and stretched over two nights instead of one. Half hour crammed a lot.
It rushed at the end, yeah.
Because it really was the story of Dr. Clark.
Yes.
And everything that happened after she died got condensed into a small amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
But it really, it's the sister's story, but it's really her story, because not only was she like the Joe Jackson, the Matthew Knowles, whatever, not only did she shape and drive the sisters, but what they showed, but I don't know, what they said it, but I don't know if some people missed it. Dr. Clark was the music director for the entire Kojic church.
Yes.
So what she did was go from church to church to instruct singers, to
and
teach
choirs.
Choir
mm-hmm.
directors.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason, like the Mary Marys and evil, all the gospel singers that come out of the Kojic church were likely taught by somebody who was taught by mm-hmm. Dr. Clark. So that Clark sound goes beyond the Clark sisters. Nobody was doing harmonies. Like, there were always alto, soprano, mm-hmm. tenors. Nobody was blending them quite mm-hmm. the way she mm-hmm. was. But that Clark sound goes beyond just the Clark sisters. It is gospel music
yeah.
because her teaching and her impact went throughout such a large
Yeah. It went across the country.
Yeah, it
literally.
Went across the country. And, you know, there are Baptist conventions and Methodist conventions, but nobody does, like, the convocation like Kojic does,
yeah,
right? Where
yeah.
everybody's in one central place where you're, like, fellowshipping with each other on that level and where you're hearing choir sing and doing all that other stuff. So there was just a opportunity for a wider reach. So, yeah, that's one of those things when we talk about singers coming out of the church, is because you have certain styles that you learn that are passed down, that you watch other people, that you learn from other people, and that has kind of gone away, you know?
Yeah. Also, what I mean, the perform again, I'm going to talk about her for a second. The performance, again, was just, this blows your mind, right? This blows your head off what she's doing. And what she managed to do, which is very interesting that they didn't do in the Jackson, and maybe this is because that wasn't who he was, is even with all the harshness and the meanness and whatever, she still managed to humanize her. Like, she still, there were still parts of her being a little funny sometimes.
Yeah, she was still a mom. I don't think Joe had that in her.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know if Joe was ever like that. That's what I'm saying. So I don't want to say, like, you know, the Jacksons didn't do this, because maybe that's just not who Joe was, but like, she still was a mom. She still was a little funny sometimes. Or like when, when Jackie was getting married and she was like, look at my pretty baby. Like she would do these little mom
yeah,
things.
Like, y'all pretty girl.
She my pretty girl. Said, yeah. Oh, even when she was in the hospital, she was like, these are my daughters. See, this yeah. is Dorinda. She's my fire.
Da-da-da. Yeah.
Like, so she managed to give her just such a it could have went another way, and she just could have been a mean, evil person, period. But she managed to really humanize her to the point when she did, you know, when it did get close to the end, and
right.
I saw her with the cane and she
yep.
was struggling, I felt you bad.
Well,
instead of being like, you deserve that because you was mean to your daughters. And even with the Twinkie thing, it was like, not that she was right, but I understood. With all there was different parts where she kind of talked to all of them and said,
yeah.
this is why I'm this way with you. This is
yeah.
why. And it's like, I'm not saying I always agreed, but there
but
was there was the thought process to
yeah.
why she treated Dorinda this way, why she treated Karen this way, why
right.
she, there was a, it was, she was cognizant of what she was doing.
Right.
She wasn't being mean, like, all y'all shut the fuck up.
Right,
you know?
Right. She really, but I think there were a couple of things at play. I think for one, and remind me, I don't think the Jackson family was actually intimately involved in the Jackson story.
I think maybe like Jermaine was,
I think maybe,
but not all. But not a little. I know Michael. Michael definitely won.
Yeah, all of the sisters were involved in this, mm-hmm. right?
Except Misha.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a testament to how much they love their mom, first of all, and the fact that the understanding they have of their mom's journey and why she did what she did. But the underlying story there is also kind of like the story of the limitations and impositions put on women by the Kojic Church.
Absolutely.
You know, they literally did sit her down after mm-hmm. that Grammy performance. She wasn't doing nothing.
She didn't do nothing.
She was going to stay saying hallelujah.
There was covered head to toe. They sung hallelujah. They praised the Lord.
It was just hating.
It was like,
yeah, that's what's going for. It was definitely hate.
Yeah, we don't want you to stand out because you're not like the quote unquote leader of the Kojic Church.
Right.
So you shouldn't be in front of a national audience like that.
It's ridiculous. And there was, you know, the whole not wearing pants thing and the whole like, you know, how sanctified the house has to be and what that looks like and how that operates and what environment that fosters, right? So that I think was the other thing, was like Maddie fighting against like what she was being taught and meant to be, like an obedient woman of Christ in the church, and what it meant to teach, to bring her women up, bring her daughters up to edify God, and how that conflicted with people having personal choice in their personal lives. Mm-hmm. So I think that was an intentional subplot, because that was definitely like a struggle, especially for poor Twink. I mean, Twink's life has been
I know. I read something interesting about her. They said, because in the movie they didn't really kind of make this clear, but she actually did go to Howard for a little while and she dropped out.
She had to drop out.
She had to drop out. Yeah, they made it seem like in the movie that she never went.
Okay.
But so when she was there, it was the same time as Richard Smallwood. Mm-hmm. I think Donnie was there at that time.
That would have also been when Angela, if it was when Richard was there.
But they said it was like a powerhouse of talent at Howard at the time. Roberta Flack, I think, was there. Mm-hmm. And they said all of them would rush to the music room to watch Twinkie practice. Because they could not, they was like, I ain't never seen nobody play organ like this is unbelievable. Like
I don't think she would have been there with Donnie and them, because they were a little older than her. They're like a few years, like you know, 8-9 years older than her. So I mean, look, for me, the first thing, and I've seen the movie a while ago. I told you guys.
Did you watch it again?
Yes.
Did you watch it again Saturday? Okay.
So a couple things I took away, and there is something about nuanced Black culture that the Brits can't do.
No.
Like they can't duplicate
that.
They can't duplicate that rock in the pew. That's a Black person that has been in the Black church that has seen a Black elder do that rock on several occasions. And something said, let me just go. So I go and Google her. So
Sean,
he broke up.
But I think.
She keep breaking up, bro.
Yeah, I'm.
Wait, so you're breaking up. I think part of what Sean is saying, which, you know, even though a lot of us have moved away from the Black church, and I don't mean us, like me, for example. Oh, there. That's okay. I think what you're trying to say, tell me, American culture is rooted in the Black American church. Even if we
pretty much all of it.
Not necessarily religion, but church. Everything. Because there is a church culture that exists that's separate from the actual spiritual and religious aspect of the church, right?
Yes.
And I always argue that the three biggest communal aspects of Black American Black culture are church, Black church, food, and music. Mm-hmm. You put the three of those together and all in, you know what I mean, within one another. Because that show, so many things that she said, I was like, this is just Black as fuck. Like, it's just Black. It was just Black. As like when she in the hospital, first of all, when they were trying to take her to the doctor, she was like, I talked to Jesus, and Jesus said, I'm healed. Now I'm healed. But when they tell her you shouldn't be in it,
yeah,
that were separate from the story that was being told. That could have been any black family. Oh, Sean's back.
Sidebar, that speech that she gives about feeling healed, that's on YouTube.
Okay.
She did that in the church. She did.
I believe in that.
She's like, diabetes is gone, and that's literally taken word for word from a speech she did at a Cogent. I go to church. Also, when Nisi came up and spoke at the funeral, that's word for word.
But she was on the program at the funeral.
Yeah,
that's the difference.
Yeah, but what she's saying
yeah.
is word for word what she said at the service. Go ahead, bro, because you had fell off.
No, I was just trying to say that.
Frozen again?
Oh. All right, you guys go ahead.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I feel like I'm fucking everything
good,
up. You guys go
no,
ahead.
No, you're good. No, we can hear you now.
Olga, I was just saying that I just don't think that there's certain things that so when you look at All American and you kind of see the kid who's a Brit, you know, mm-hmm. does the black LA thing, right? Like it's that to me is a little easier than
yeah.
black church.
Yeah.
Like there's a level of nuance, right, that you just need to have been around that. You can't explain 100%. That. You can't kind of mm-hmm. talk about it. You kind of have got you've had to have seen it and lived it and, you know, had them pinch you in that pew.
Those
things in order for all and for all of them, because one of the things that one of the things we all talked about was that how are they going to do with the singing? The singing.
Oh my God. That was just.
Jesus Christ. I mean, that was phenomenal.
Yeah. 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 Also, even like you said, like the church, even little stuff like a person might, like when she threw the shoe. First of all, I laughed when she threw the shoe. But like some people would have been like, I would have stood there if she threw the shoe. It's like, nah, if you went to church, you would have stood because you just know.
You would have known it was coming. You wouldn't have been in shock. Also, there's a level of deference. Some people now like you being older doesn't mean you get to abuse me. I get it. However, if my choir director had thrown a shoe at me in my youth choir in 1986, my ass would have stood there, and I would.
Yeah. And you knew you was chewing the gum. And you knew you was chewing the gum. That's why you would have stood there. Because you knew you was wrong.
And I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, because dead wrong.
My choir director / minister of music right now will embarrass a grown person in the middle of rehearsal and make you stand up and spit your gum out, or quit talking, or sing your shit up. Like, that's just how. Listen, like, one thing that Maddie Clark kept saying, and I know we hear it in other things, but in churches that have serious music ministries, your seriousness about your music equates your seriousness about your devotion to God, right? Like, that's what they will tell you over and over again. You are singing for Him. You are singing mm-hmm. to glory. You cannot embarrass God. This is about God. It's ministry.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I think that that's one of the things that really came through with that, is that Maddie wanted them to be excellent for various reasons, but what a lot of it is about is that the music ministry in the church is ministry. It's like
it's the glue.
Yeah, you don't want nobody to preach sloppy. You don't want nobody to sing sloppy. Like, that brings souls forward.
Yeah.
You know, so I really just appreciate the realness and the rawness. First of all, shout out to Holly Carter, who was the executive producer, who has moved in that black gospel world forever. Mm-hmm. And then to obviously Mary and Missy and Latifa, who were producers, to just that it's so important to make sure there are people backing it, to make sure it gets done. I mean, everything. The wardrobe was on point. Donald Lawrence was the music. The music was on point. Like, the references were on point. The hair was on point.
In fairness, they had an enormous amount of footage.
Of course.
To pull from. Yeah. And that always helps. Like, that was one of the things I felt like made Ray incredible, was that there was so much footage you could pull from Ray. It gave Jamie a foundation to basically mimic Right? Like, yeah, you can pick up the nuances and all of the small little details. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Couple, and I want to give a quick shout out. Well, first of all, before I give my shout out, I just have to say, when Twinkie's husband pushed Maddie down, I wanted to come. I literally screamed in the house. The fuck are you doing? Like, I woke up the next day upset about that shit. Like, I can't believe I pushed it down. But I also want to give a shout out, and I don't think people really wrap their mind around this, to Kira, to Kiki Sheard.
Not only playing her mom,
playing against her aunts, yeah, and her grandmother, yeah, and her father. Because remember, she dated, that's got to be like, whoa, like, right. Like, you're my aunts, you're my grandmother, and this guy I met is playing my dad, who I'm dating. Like, it's
right,
like,
right.
It's a lot. So,
she did her thing, though.
That was great. Everybody was great.
And I felt like each of them embodied, like, I'm not as hard a Clark sister. Like, I appreciate the Clark sisters. I'm not as hard of a stan of each of them as some people that I know are. But I know enough to know a little bit about each of their different personalities. And each one of those actresses, like, they even found a Twinkie with a gap in her teeth. Like, it's amazing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they embodied them so well. It was just really well done.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. So, like, kudos to everybody. And, I mean, we mentioned this a while ago, but again, you know, like, kudos to Lifetime, because, you know, they got the Salt and Pepper movie coming out. They got the Bobby Christina and Whitney Doc coming out. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch it.
Do we mean it? Now it feels exploitive.
I know, but I'm going to watch it. I ain't going to lie. I'm going to watch it. They got the Wendy Williams doc, which looked...
Don't need that either.
Troubling. Coming to, I'm just saying, like, their black programming, they got the Keisha Knight Pulliam got some movie with, you know, like, their black programming is like, you know, they in fifth gear with it now. They just killing it. And I'm always like, oh man, BET, like, you let all this shit, even the Clark sisters. So BET obviously has Sunday Best. They had, Kiki was on the show. It's like, yo, man, like, they let all this stuff just slip right through their hands. Whatever, that's a story for a different day. But bottom line is, the movie was phenomenal. Like Russ said, he had told us about it, that we would love it a while ago. Props to him, because he didn't give us no spoilers.
And also, like, the trailer was out. The trailer's been out forever, because I think originally it was supposed to come out much... Sean, wasn't it supposed to come out top of year originally?
Yeah, I watched this movie. It was warm outside, because I remember watching it outside when I watched the link. So
we saw the trailer.
We saw the trailer at Essence.
Yeah, they Mary honored the Clark sisters. As a matter of fact, I saw Mona there. Mary honored the Clark sisters at her Strength of a Woman brunch at Essence Fest last summer, and we saw, like, an extended trailer there.
Okay.
You know, so I think it was supposed to come out originally either over the holidays or top of the year. This was definitely a push date, but
it actually worked out. Because of the crazy COVID, everybody sitting in the damn house Saturday night.
They had 2.7 million viewers, which is a clear record for Lifetime. I thought it might have done more than that, but I think there was something else on that I remember seeing people kind of go back and forth about. I can't remember.
Was it the battle? There's a battle going on.
Which was
second view.
God bless.
And this week, this week is
interesting, though, that, like, an IG Live is now actually competing
with a live television show.
But I saw a lot of people say, because I did the same thing. I wanted to watch Primo and RZA, but I was like, because even IG Live, you can watch it back for 24 hours. So I was like, I'll have to watch it later, because I really need to watch Clark Sisters in real time. And I saw other people saying the opposite. But I will also say that it definitely benefited from incredible marketing. I mean, it had the right names behind it, and the fact that the sisters themselves were part of it and on board with it, and they dropped the album like a week ago. It was really good marketing, it was really good seating, it was really good timing. Giving some black people some black shit to watch about church on Easter weekend is perfect.
Yeah,
you can't ask for better than that. So it was great. Well done all the way around.
It was great. So this week, allegedly, we're getting Teddy and Babyface. And that's something. And we'll see. That's what I said. We'll see if it happens. It's supposed to be Saturday night. We'll see what's happening.
I don't even want to see Teddy anymore. I'm over that nigga.
We'll see.
Whatever.
And then Jermaine Dupri's been online talking a lot of shit, trying to ramp up Puffy to come on and battle him. So maybe that's the next one to come up in a couple weeks. We'll see how that goes. And that's it. We're going to wrap it up.
I feel like I had something to tell y'all once we were in here, but I don't forgot what it was. Oh, I just want to say, just shout out to everybody who's going through. So I'm on my last roll of good toilet paper.
Oh.
I got toilet paper. This is my last roll of good toilet paper.
There's a spot not far from you that got Scott.
Oh, okay. I'm going to have to go find it. That's what I'm on. I got like some no-name generic. Yeah. I got the fluffiest no-name generic I could find. This is my last roll of like the Charmin double soul.
Yeah.
Whatever the fuck. So I, but if that's the worst problem I have right now, I'm okay.
Exactly. So everybody, y'all stay safe out there, man. If you're in New York, you know, it's very intense right now. Hopefully this thing is going to start to go down a little bit. And for wherever you are, though, stay safe. New Orleans, D.C., Chicago, you know, L.A., wherever. Be safe, and we'll see y'all next week.
Peace.
Later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.